Hey y'all, how's it going? Welcome to the show. It's my show. This is Scott Horton's show here on the Liberty Radio Network. And, you know, I don't know, maybe the local station you're listening to it on. Yeah, Liberty Radio Network here, noon to 2 Eastern Time. Sorry it's not noon to 3 anymore. I had to cut it back. I got too many other obligations and responsibilities. Trying to make my way in this world here. It's all work along the same lines. Yeah. I don't know, man. I need more hours in the day. I don't know how everybody else does it, but I don't. All right. Today on the show, our friend Yosef Butt will be on, hopefully. Yesterday it was not a time zone problem. It turns out it was an internet problem. He's overseas somewhere where the internet ain't so good. So we had a problem, but I have his backup landline phone number now. And I think the telephone service probably isn't too good either. But one way or the other, damn it, we're going to talk with Yosef Butt on the show today. He's going to teach us nuclear things about Iran's nuclear program that we need to know. So, yeah, stay tuned for that. Good old Yosef Butt actually knows what he's talking about, unlike David Albright that you see on CNN all day. And all the scaremongers from the Mujahideen e-cult communist terrorist cult that the Republicans love so much. Oh, don't act so surprised. Ronald Reagan was Pol Pot's best friend in the whole wide world. Everybody knows that. Anyway, Yosef Butt, he'll be on the show. And also, Catherine Hughes, she sent me an email. You know me, man. Anything less than the whole truth is an outright lie to me. So here's the whole story. She sent me an email saying, you once interviewed me about this thing I wrote about this trial. So I Googled her name up on my website there, and yep, there's my interview of her, all right. And then I clicked the link, and I read the article, and I remember now because I reread the article, but I don't remember this happening at all. It's 2.5 years ago. She wrote this article for Truth that I interviewed. I mean, I guess it started ringing a bell as I was reading through the article, but boy, did I forget a thing ever happened in my life, man, the interview with this lady about this thing. Oh, but then I started listening to the interview, and, oh, yeah, the Irish lady about the trial. Yeah, so that started to ring a bell, too. But it's just like that Far Side shirt that my cousin got me way back when, where the kid is raising his hand and telling the teacher, can I be excused? My brain is full. Yeah, that's me. I learned a new thing. Old things I once knew fall out the other side of my skull. That's just how it is. I ran plumb out of neurons. Anyway, so she's going to be back on the show, this Catherine Hughes, because this story is really important. There's an innocent man locked in a cage in America. Would you believe that? I know. Locking people in cages is what America was founded upon. But I'm just saying, in this one case, you know, geez, a little bit of light on it, I don't know. It won't make any difference for him, but maybe it'll help make a little bit of difference for your mind. I'll find out all about Dr. Raphael Doffer, innocent victim of the American predator state. Okay, cool. And then also tons of news. But before I do the news, let me do this. I get to tell you about my sponsors. I really appreciate my sponsors. I've got some great sponsors. And I'm very grateful for having such great sponsors. And without them, there would be no show. With more of them, the show probably would be even better. Well, depending on how many more of them. I could think of some things I could hire people to do if I had that much money. But I need sponsors. The goal of me always is to just barely make it. I don't care. As long as the light bill's on and, you know, I can just barely get by, I don't care. I don't need to own a house or a new truck or any kind of cool stuff. I just need to be able to continue doing my work, and I need sponsors to do that. I hate begging for money. Well, it's not even begging. Asking for subscriptions and donations, that's fair enough. It's fee for service. It's, quality for quality. It is what it is. So, you know, if you want to donate to the show, if you want to subscribe and go to scotthorton.org/donate, anybody donates more than $100, I'll send you a 1 ounce silver round a QR code commodity disc with a QR code on the back. Instead of a face value engraved on it, it's got a QR code engraved on it. You scan that with your phone, you get the instant spot price. I don't know how this didn't go from Arlo's first shipment to the standard currency on Earth in a week and a half. I mean, it just seems to me absolutely perfect. What could be more perfect for a currency than the commodity disc? So you get one of those if you sign up $100. But what I really need is advertisers. And for example, if you advertise on the show, I'll do things like this. I'll talk about your stuff. Like, for example, Mike Swanson. He's been back in this show since I first got laid off from antiwar.com back more than 2 years ago now. First, just Wall Street Window, his investment advice. He's a former hedge fund manager who, Wall Street Window is kind of self-explanatory right there, right? He lets you know everything that he does in the market. So then you decide whether that makes sense for you to follow him the same way. And that's all he's selling is that advice, right? He's not selling a service where once you think that he's, got it right, that then you have him manage all your transactions and take a cut or anything like that. That's not what it is. It's just advice. You follow along on paper, you decide whether it's smart, whether this guy knows what he's doing or not, and then if you think so, then maybe you take his advice in practice with your actual savings. It's the guy knows what he's talking about, man. He's an Austrian who's proven it with his victories in the market. WallStreetWindow.com. And the other thing is, he's a brilliant revisionist historian. And you hear my advertisements for his book, The War State, on this show all the time. It's the history of post-World War II American national security state encroachment, you know, a replacement of the American system with FDR's beast. And it's the story of Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy grappling with this thing, empowering it while also being scared to death of it and trying to limit it in some ways. It's the new right. It's the rise of the military-industrial complex after World War II. And not just, well, yeah, the military is the first part of that. Everybody always focuses on the industrial part because usually it's kind of left-wingers and liberals who are more critical of the empire most of the time. So they emphasize that financial greed as though admirals don't all make a killing for a living. But it's the military-industrial complex. There's a huge interest in the national security state itself. And anyway, the war state is a great beginning. Is a great history of the beginning of that after World War II. And the thing is that Mike Swanson is right now working on a new book about Vietnam, which is guaranteed to be a game changer. I mean, this is a guy who, first of all, knows all of the best scholarship on Vietnam by heart, but also is prepared to completely one and two and three up their asses with his access that he gained to firsthand documents from the highest levels of the history of the planning of that war. And he's got the mother load. I hope I didn't just give too much away, but he is writing a kick-ass book about Vietnam right now, so stay tuned for that. It's Mike Swanson at WallStreetWindow.com. Get The War State. You can get it on audiobook. Here's the trifecta. You can get the audiobook of The War State that's done by Listen and Think Audio. Former sponsor of the show, kind of sort of sponsor of the show. Actually, yeah, I guess he still is. Yeah. Anyway, Listen and Think Audio did the audiobook of The War State, and you can hear it for free by going to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show and signing up for Audible Trial. You get your first book free. So you get The War State. You patronize Listen and Think Audio, which is dedicated to getting good libertarian stuff out there in audiobook form. And then also a little bit of a kickback to the show from audibletrial.com. And you see how much I love my sponsors? I spent half of that segment on just the one sponsor. Just wait, I'm going to talk about the rest here more in a second. You could be one too. I'm Scott at scotthorton.org. Yeah, anti-war stuff in a minute, but business is business.
Hey, Al Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all. QR Silver Commodity Discs, the first ever QR code 1-ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. All right, I'm not going to be able to give all of my sponsors that much attention, or I won't have time for any of my interviews today. Moving on from Mike Swanson's great stuff, Wall Street Window, The War State. Of course, there's also the Council for the National Interest. That's Philip Giraldi's group. Yes, he's a former CIA officer, and he's an advertiser on this show. On the other hand, the guy's a straight shooter, man. I've been interviewing him since 2005. You can read all his stuff at the American Conservative Magazine, at UNS.com, at antiwar.com, and see whether you think he's a CIA plot to try to truth us out of war or what, but I trust him. Well, I mean, not blindly. He is a former CIA officer, but he don't ever seem like he's lying. And the purpose of the Council for the National Interest is to try to stick up for the American people so that they have a say in Middle East policy instead of everything being decided by the pro-Israel lobby. And by pro-Israel lobby, I mean the pro-Israeli government lobby, which actually has as its interest anything but the interests of the people of Israel, or certainly not the people of the United States of America. So I don't mind the association one bit. If you want to say it's a step removed from the man, you'd have a point. But then again, it ain't like he's shy about it. He's a former CIA officer. It is what it is. You can go back and listen to my 100-something interviews of the guy. Tell me whether you think there's a compromise there. I don't see a compromise. Seems perfectly fine to me. I think the Council for the National Interest is a fine organization. And it sucks to even have to say a disclaimer like that about it all. But, hey, he is a former CIA officer. So I guess I do have to, you know, from time to time throw that disclaimer in there. You guys make of it what you will. But, you know, I don't have any pressure from him to cover anything whatsoever, or to not cover anything, or anything like that. So, whatever. Anyway, and I think the CNI is great, and they did a great conference in February where they called together a hell of a lot of experts for an all-day conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. To talk about that quote-unquote special relationship. Which, you know, the fact that you have to call it that is just proof that all it means is a tiny little satellite state taking complete advantage of the gigantic criminal empire that ostensibly, you know, has the majority of the power in this situation. Anyway, Council for the National Interest, great organization. I'm proud that this show is sponsored by them. That's what I mean to say about it. Also, the Future Freedom Foundation, pretty much goes without saying, right? Hornberger, Richmond, Bovard, Gregory. All right. The Future Freedom Foundation, FFF.org. Subscribe to their magazine. Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. They are brokers. They will hook you up with sellers of precious metals, silver, gold, platinum, palladium. And they're fair. And they're honest, and they do good business, and they take Bitcoin, and it's Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc., one of the newer sponsors of the show. I'm very happy to have them on board, and I hear nothing but good things about the business that they do, and so very happy to say that. Whole Food Multi-Complete is another pretty much brand new. I think that's the brand newest advertiser that I have on the show, is some vitamins, and I'm not typically a health nut, but I have been taking these, at least, I don't know, as much as I'm supposed to. But, yeah, I don't know. If you're into vitamins and that kind of thing, check them out anyway. WholeFoodComplete.com. They've got a very thorough website. The guy, Russell, it's a self-proprietor kind of a thing. The guy's very above board and has as much information for you as he can on the website there. He's not trying to hire you to sell vitamins for him. And he's not promising that this stuff will cure your cancer or any kind of kooky stuff. It's just straight up, honest, decent product. Whole Food Complete. I hate to have to give that disclaimer, but you know how it is in the vitamin business. There's a lot of crap. This isn't that. This is just fine. Whole Food Multi-Complete vitamins there. Check them out. All, as it says, Whole Food products, no synthetic chemicals included whatsoever. All right, that's Whole Food Meals Complete. Liberty stickers and the bumper sticker. Of course, I founded thebumpersticker.com back when. It was my company, me and my buddy Tracy, but now it belongs, well, for the last, for its entire existence, pretty much, it's belonged to Rick McGinnis, who does a great job. He's kept it open for more than a decade now and put a lot of anti-government propaganda out there to the world at libertystickers.com. And if you got a band or a business and you need stickers, check out thebumpersticker.com. They do great work. They've got in-house talent with the graphics. It's all solvent ink on digital printers, so they can do full quality photo, photograph quality stickers with eco solvent ink. And so, yeah, man, anyway, check it out. It's, thebumpersticker.com for your custom stuff, libertystickers.com for mostly my hateful propaganda, but there's some other stuff on there too. Braswell's book. Chris Braswell wrote a book. Denver Day, that's his pen name. Was that supposed to be some kind of thing? I don't know. It's really fun. I like it. It's about a detective, and he's working on the West Coast, and I won't tell you anymore. It's called Pizza Noir, Book 1. And Book 2 is about to come out, so you better hurry up and get Book 1. It's the first fiction I've read in a decade or something. I liked it, man. Denver Day, Pizza Noir, Book 1. Go-Kart Galaxy and Web Dev Geeks. Both run web ads at scotthorton.org and have for many months now in a row, and I greatly appreciate that. Go-Kart Galaxy and Web Dev Geeks. They do go-karts and mini motorbike parts, too, so check that out. And, of course, Web Dev Geeks, self-explanatory. They'll build you a website in exchange for money. My Heroes Think, they sell busts of Rothbard, Mises, and Harry Brown, and Ron Paul. You can't go wrong with that. I think Mises too, right? Yeah. You can't go wrong with that. MyHeroesThink.com. I got the Harry Brown one. It's great, man. MyHeroesThink.com. And I mentioned Listen and Think there, but they should get a separate mention. Derek Sheriff is doing great work there at ListenAndThinkAudio.com, making mostly libertarian audiobooks. It's a huge segment of people out there who don't read, but they sure do like listening to books, and he's doing the best he can to get this stuff into audio format for, you know, the future of mankind. That's at Listen and Think Audio. And then, well, they ain't paying me, but I'll still brag about it. I'm happy to be involved with Voices of Liberty, which is sort of the expanded Ron Paul channel there at voicesofliberty.com. And they're running, I guess, you know, a third of my interviews, something like that. Hey, I don't want to overdose everybody if they don't want more. But voicesofliberty.com, very proud to have even the slightest association with the greatest American hero, Dr. Ron Paul. Oh, crap, and I left out Darren's coffee. Hey, listen, you guys drink coffee, right? Probably 90% of y'all listening are morning coffee drinking people. Hey, help support the show and drink great coffee at the same time. It's darrenscoffee.com. It's really good, man. And I don't know what I got to do. I guess I got to send him some money back after he pays me. Get more coffee. Just pay me in coffee, man. I mean, I don't mind drinking Folgers. That's kind of been my thing. But darrenscoffee.com is great, man. Get the coffee. Free shipping. Use the promo code Scott. If you're just getting one bag, that's saving you $6 right there. Use promo code Scott. Free shipping, and that's even if you get 100 bags of coffee, free shipping. Darrenscoffee.com. Be right back. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show, and our first guest today is Catherine Hughes. She's an activist and a writer for truthout.org, and she's written these two very important articles I'd like you to look at. The first one here is from January 2012, Anatomy of a Quote, yes, air quotes, Terrorism Prosecution. Dr. Rafil Dafir, and the Help the Needy Muslim charity case. Help the Needy Muslim charity case. That's what I meant to say there. And then this one is Fairness and Justice, Post 9/11 Muslim Charity Prosecution. This is at, again, at Truth Out from September the 20th of this year, 2014. And this will be a follow-up. I first talked with Catherine back in 2012 when this first article came out. Very interesting story. Welcome back to the show, Catherine. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Scott.
I'm very happy to have you on the show here. I'm very happy that you reminded me of this story. I spent the morning rereading the first article and going over the second. It's a very important story here. An individual has been locked up, it seems unfairly, so it might be the most important thing in the world right now. Tell us, first of all, broad strokes, the background. Who is Dr. Rafil Dafir?
He's an Iraqi-born oncologist who worked here in upstate New York. He's been in prison for about 12 years now, and the reason he's in prison is because he sent food and medicine to Iraq during the brutal sanctions against that country. I mean, for 13 years, he fundraised, really knocked himself out, and had a website, kept asking the government, is it okay to send humanitarian aid, was given the go-ahead, and then on the morning of the 26th of February 2003, he was arrested and charged with breaking the sanctions, and he has never been home since then. I mean, initially, the indictment was 14 counts of things related to the sanctions and sending money to Iraq. But when Dafir wouldn't accept a plea bargain, when his case came to trial 19 months later, he faced an indictment of 60 counts, including 25 Medicare counts. And actually, when the trial was 17 weeks long, and I don't remember how many weeks it was before we got to the Medicare part of the case. But when we got to that part of the case, it was so ludicrous. I just thought the government had shot themselves in the foot. They had like bar charts where Dr. Dafir's bar was huge and the other doctors were small, but the witness didn't know if they were other oncologists using expensive chemotherapy. So it was an education for me. I attended almost every day of the trial. In fact, I just passed my 10th anniversary of my first day at the trial. And because of the size of the injustice that I witnessed, it won't let me go. I mean, my blood still boils when I talk about this case, and that's 10 years later. And, you know, I wrote to you because we've had this fantastic new development in the case, mm-hmm. where the Muslim Legal Fund of America, which is a charity in Texas, has hired retired Lieutenant Commander Charles Swift. Mm-hmm. And he's the man who took the... When he was in the Navy, he was assigned the case, the Hamdan case, and he was the driver of Bin Laden, and the government, he was being charged as a terrorist, and Charles Swift took that case to the Supreme Court and won, and that meant that Salim Hamdan was able to go home. And, you know, I think Swift brings a lot of things to this case. Even during the trial, I noticed that one of the big, I noticed straight away it wasn't just a fear, you know, that Muslim charity in the post 9/11 period was under siege. I mean, in December 2001, the three biggest Muslim charities were shuttered. That was Holy Land Foundation, Benevolence International Foundation, and Global Relief. And, you know, like, the Holy Land Foundation case didn't come to trial until 6 years after that. And, I mean, I hope that Swift will be able to bring justice to Dafir's case, and that Dr. Dafir, who's now in his mid-60s and has spent the last 12 years in prison under horrible conditions, will get home and to spend some time in his family. But my other hope for Charles Swift being on the case is that he'll help bring attention not only to Dafir's case, but to what's happened to other Muslim charities. I mean, the two Holy Land Foundation main people after a second trial were sentenced to 65 years each. The other thing about Charles Swift is a lot of these people, like Dr. Dafir and the Holy Land Foundation people, were put into a special communication management unit, which many people consider a Guantanamo North. And not a lot of people know about this. So I'm so grateful that the Muslim Legal Fund of America have taken on this case, and that they have such a brilliant lawyer. And if nothing else, I hope it will bring a spotlight to what's happening, because certainly for me in the last 10 years, it's been very difficult to get any coverage, basically because the government never tried him as a terrorist. He was charged as a white-collar criminal, but, you know, he was sent to the CMU. He's now in another prison, but he's not eligible for a camp because of the US designation. So, you know, he just had his the November 4th deadline for a 2255 habeas corpus petition. And Dafir has been without a lawyer for the last year, and he had to submit that petition by himself. And you can imagine that was no easy task. And I mean, particularly because on June 18th this year, he was put in the special housing unit for absolutely no reason, which really impeded his ability to prepare his motion. And, you know, it took like call-in days, letter writing, two senators, Gillibrand and Senator Warren, contacting the prison. And finally, after 73 days, they put him out, and we still don't know why he was there in the first place.
All right. Now, I'm sorry, Catherine. I got to stop you here. We got to take this break.
Okay.
But if you'll hold the line, we'll be right back in just a few minutes. Everybody's Catherine Hughes, writing for truthout.org on the case of Dr. Rafil Dafir, railroaded by the state as a publicity stunt before the Iraq War. We'll be right back in just a sec. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Catherine Hughes. She's written this thing at truthout.org. Fairness and Justice, Post 9/11 Muslim Charity Prosecution. And it's about this doctor. He's an oncologist, Dr. Rafael Dafir. And he was persecuted by the Department of Justice just right before the Iraq War in 2003. A huge investigation, headlines all over the place about how this guy was money laundering for terrorists and Saddam Hussein in Iraq and terrorism and Iraq and terrorism. Just trying to confuse your mom in the run-up to that war there. Just another fake orange alert. And at the end of the day, they didn't even bring terrorism charges against him. They ended up just charging him with some white-collar stuff that apparently was all just trumped up and bogus. And the judge apparently was perfectly happy to let the jury be inundated with innuendo about the reasons to believe that terrorism charges are pending as soon as you're done convicting him of this stuff, but without ever really saying so. And John Ashcroft and Governor Pataki made big press conferences, made a big giant orange alert terrorism case out of this. And then what it turned out was, as she said, some bogus Medicare fraud case where there wasn't even any Medicare fraud. As she said in their chart, they're comparing this very expensive chemotherapy he's doing to the costs of different kinds of doctors doing entirely different kinds of medical care for different people. In other words, their evidence was just slapped together, scraping the bottom of the barrel, trying to come up with a way to put this guy in prison, which, of course, the jury was perfectly happy to go along with. It's just another one of these. And as you were saying, I think it's very important, as you mentioned there, Catherine, about how it's so important that we get coverage for this case. It's so beneficial, it's so positive for this case that we have such a prominent lawyer coming on now. To try to get attention to it, and as you said, not just for Dr. Dafir, but to bring attention to all the other trumped-up terrorism cases since September 11th. I mean, you're focusing on the charities who've been wrongly prosecuted. There's an entire reckoning with the last decade's Department of Justice and their bogus war on terrorism here in the United States. They've gotten all of maybe three or four actual terrorists, including Al-Mari and Zacharias Moussaoui, from the very beginning of this thing. Maybe one small handful of actual terrorists in this country, Zazi from Denver, that kind of thing, Faisal Shahzad, who attacked Times Square. Otherwise, we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of trumped up bogus terrorism prosecutions. Almost 100 or so of them, more than 50 of them, certainly outright entrapment sting operations. But so many more are cases just like this, where it's just a giant trumped up PR stunt, Operation Showtime kind of a thing for the agencies doing the prosecuting and doing the arresting and PR for the war and all that kind of thing, while innocent men are rotting in cages. And the government is getting away with it. So I'm sorry for having so much of my own say right there, but I want to try to, snap people's attention too. This is really important. There's a doctor who, what was he guilty of? He was guilty of trying to provide food and medicine to the sanctioned, the blockaded, starving, dying people of Iraq under the Bush sanctions regime before the invasion of 2003. And as you said, Catherine, he had checked with the State Department all along and got permission, had been working with them. Of course, what is he, an idiot? He's working with the State Department, making sure that what he's doing is within the letter of the law. Because he's not trying to get in trouble. He's not trying to help Saddam Hussein. He's a doctor. He's trying to help women and children over there that Bill Clinton was killing. And then they stabbed him in the back after giving him a license to do so.
Actually, he didn't have a license. He used the
license. Well, I meant that kind of figuratively, but
of another charity, and that is not illegal. And after 9/11, I think a lot of Muslim charities were wanting to put their houses more in order. So he had applied for a license that, if granted, would have been retroactive, and it should have been dealt, you know, he should have got a response within 6 months, but the government had put a block on that. And actually, that was one of the really sad things at trial as well, because if the government had left it another few weeks before it arrested him, all that part of the case would have been sorted out, because Dr. Dafir had hired accountants and lawyers to get it sorted out. I just want to go back to the bar chart, because we don't know what the other doctors were. I mean, I can assume that they might have been primary care physicians or something, but that was what was so blatant about it, was that the person who was supposed to be explaining the bar chart had no idea, which effectively made it, the bar chart, meaningless. So, and there were times, you know, there were other times like that in the trial where Mrs. Dafir was Dr. Dafir's office manager, and Medicare rules are extremely complicated, and the whole 25 counts was on one rule, and it's called the Incident 2 rule, and that's treatment Incident 2, the doctor's treatment. And when Mrs. Dafir left the house at 6:30 in the morning, and just shortly after, the FBI came to the house and knocked on the door and then battered it down, found Mrs. Dafir in her nightgown on the other side and had 5 guns to her head, and then 85 agents in and out the house all day. So there she is on the stand describing this, and her guilty plea is to one count of lying to a government agent, because she had said, I think, that her husband was in the office on a day that he wasn't. And so you know, and up on the board opposite, as the defence had put a piece out of Medicare that if people were overpaid, a refund would be requested. So you've got all this bizarre stuff going on, and it made the whole trial surreal. And that was true, even like I've been to all the appeals, and it's because he was never charged with anything except white collar crime. Michael Powell of the Washington Post called it shadow boxing, and I think that's the best description I've heard, because Dr. Dafir can only go on the court record, and the government successfully kept that out. But the great thing about this 2255 is that we can go outside the court record. And, you know, in the last few years, we've got freedom of information discs that we've only managed to get 6 of about 38. But it's clear what, and even though they're like 95% redacted, we've only got like 5% of the pages, and those are 90% redacted, it's still very clear, you know, what the government was actually after. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they're still looking. And it's like, how much has that cost? I mean, there were people on Dafir's case, you know, 24/7 doing overtime. Is this a good use of taxpayer money? And after, like, 13 years or 15...
Yeah.
You know, if you can't find something in 15 years, yeah, don't you think that isn't anything to find?
Yeah. Well, when it comes to spending taxpayer money, it's no object from the point of view of government employees, no doubt about that. In the last minute here, I want to ask you real quick to go over some of the things you talk about the innuendo, about the terrorism case that was never brought here. Now, obviously, there was a bunch of nonsense all over TV and in the media being parroted, that kind of stuff. But as far as at the trial, you talk about the judge allowing the government to allude to a gun cleaning kit as though this must be part of some terrorist plot and allude to, oh, this man shares a religion with Osama bin Laden. Oh, we're already out of time. Well, we're already out of time. Dang it, I was going to let you.
Tell people to check out the website and also to support the Muslim Legal Fund of America, who are, you know, doing a fantastic job, but not able to help everybody that should be helped. And, and we're very lucky that
It's Catherine Hughes, y'all. DaFearTrial.net. Thanks, Catherine.
Thanks, Scott.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. If this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And our next guest is Dr. Yosef Butt. He is Senior Scientific Advisor to the British American Security Information Council, BASIC, in London. And he writes oftentimes at Reuters. You can find him at the National Interest. And every so often, guest blogging over at armscontrollaw.com, which is Dan Joyner's blog, armscontrollaw.com, and that's the case with this one. The case of the missing, quote-unquote missing, 19.8 kilograms of Iranian uranium. Oh, you don't say. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing great. Appreciate you joining us again on the show today, Yosef. Dr. Yosef, I should say. let me tell you this. For years on this show, I've said things along the lines of, don't believe anything the warmongers say about this, because the bottom line is the same thing all the time in every report for years on end. The agency has continued to verify the non-diversion of declared nuclear material in Iran to any military or other special purpose, which means they've proven the negative. All of the nuclear material is accounted for, therefore it's not anywhere else. And now I got two articles in a row by you about how actually the IAEA sucks at this, which is really unfortunate, because I think the war party has already taken up the mantle and has already started using this as a part of their argument against the quote-unquote bad deal that would allow Iran to enrich uranium at all, that the IAEA cannot be counted on to account for Iran's uranium. Sorry to use counted on and account next to each other in a sentence like that, but you understand what I'm trying to say. And so anyway, let's first of all get to the 19.8 kilograms. Is it true that the Iranians have diverted some uranium and the IAEA let them get away with it?
No, not at all. In fact, the uranium was just part of this waste, this processed waste that was stored there and was stored under seal. IAEA has very stringent seals that they put on, and you can't really tamper with them, and they never said it was tampered with. So they had some drums with waste in it in 2003. They opened it up in 2011. And they had two different estimates of the natural uranium. We're not talking about enriched stuff. This is natural uranium. In 2003, and they had another estimate 7 years later or 8 years later. And those two estimates were different. So nothing was actually missing. There was a seal on the drums of the waste, no material got anywhere. But, you know, the story got spun out of control because, it was placed next to this possible military dimensions annex in one of the IAEA reports. And then the U.S. diplomats started fanning the flames, and the press got into it, and it just spun out of control. So that's sort of what happened there.
It's amazing that people don't stop and go back and check. I mean, I know that George John at the AP doesn't want to go back and check, but it seems like, 15 times bitten, twice shy a little bit here from some of these Iran news reporters that, well, what is the story here? As you say, well, look, the entire thing is debunked on the face of it. if the barrels are all still sealed, if I don't know if they're barrels, whatever containers are still sealed, then they're still sealed. Unless you're telling me that one of the containers is missing, then there is no scandal here. As you're saying, it's the people who are making, who are basically guessing, are guessing different for whatever reason. Do you know what reason they're guessing different?
Well, it's a complicated measurement because you're trying to find out, you know, there's all sorts of crap in the waste, and you're trying to find a radiation signature and trying to estimate from that, and you know, so basically there's large error bars on it. I don't know what the precise error bars on this one would be, but it could be something like, let's say it's 19 kilograms plus or minus, you know, 15 or plus or minus 20 kilograms, which means like you don't really know. You know, it's consistent with zero, basically. Mm-hmm. So that's one part of the issue. But the other part of the issue that, you know, nuclear matters just seem scary is, you know, you have to look at what 20 kilograms of natural uranium corresponds to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk of that in terms of a significant quantity, which is more or less, you know, kind of what you'd need to get to make a bomb. And you need 10 tons of natural uranium. You need to refine that up, and that's, you know, that would be what's needed as a raw material for a bomb. So this would be 0.2%.
Let me clarify
0.2%.
That. When you say, natural, you mean it's not even yellow cake refined ore yet. It's basically just what you pulled up out of the ground at this point. Is that correct?
Well, not really. It's basically natural uranium metal, let's say. It's not enriched is what I mean. It's not enhanced in any isotope. It's the same as uranium in as far as enrichment as in the ore, but it's not, you know, it's not ore.
So in other words, this is the stuff that you would transform into hexafluoride gas to then introduce into the centrifuges.
Right, but the point being that this would be 0.2% of what would be needed to, you know, if it was further refined to make a bomb, and it's not even nowhere near a significant quantity of uranium, and you know, besides that, it's never missing. It was just discrepancy in estimates. Right. So yeah, that's the bottom line.
But so there is major news here, and the major news is the news. That they really went wild with this thing, more than I realized, actually. When I go back through your article here and the links to all this, where you even have the aforementioned George John, scaremonger at the Associated Press, implying that, I mean, he just kind of, as George W. Bush would say, shorthands it, that you could actually nuke somebody's city with this natural uranium without even having to do another thing to it to get it ready.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I have to go see if that was George John. It might have been another reporter.
I checked. The one at,
yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, the one at Reuters is Frederick Dahl, but he was the one releasing most of the reports. And actually, I think the people most at fault at this one are the people with at the U.S. mission, because they should have known not to inflame this issue. It really wasn't a big deal, and they should have technical advisors that can advise them on that. So I'm not sure why they decided to start inflaming the issue. You know, so when you talk to reporters, they say, well, you know, our job is just to report whatever other people say and not to analyze. But you know, that's a little coy. I think they could, you know, get some decent technical help and say, you know, what's really going on here, instead of just regurgitating whatever the IAEA or Western diplomats tell them. And many of these Western diplomats are not
technically informed. In fact, even if the news is what they say, then still double check, because if they're saying something wrong, that's a news story itself. They said something, but it wasn't right.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, no, it's incredible, especially on this issue after this amount of time of mis and disinformation, where there never was a big drum roll and an announcement, but they sort of just gave up on the lie that there was a secret parallel nuclear weapons program in Iran after that lie was told in American media 100 million different times. Hey, everybody knows they got a secret, illicit nuclear weapons program over there, and they just kind of dropped that lie without even saying sorry for a minute.
Well, what's interesting is if you go back to David Albright was in Congress yesterday, and they asked him, you know, did the IAEA say Iran's nuclear program is still going on? And he said, yes, that it, you know, the IAEA says that it's still, that there might be still weapon, that there is weaponization work still going on. So, you know, somebody needs to hold him to account too, because that's an outright lie to Congress.
Yeah. Well, it's going to have to be you, and I look forward to that piece as well. Yeah, no, it's all very important, and these so-called experts like David Albright sure have a lot of sway when it comes to, you know, just being cited. If anybody's got to double-check anything, they only double-check it with him a lot of the time, unfortunately. But I want to go through some of these so-called possible military dimensions. We're 4 days. I'm sorry I didn't introduce this issue well enough at the top of this interview. We're 3-4 days away from the deadline on a final nuclear deal with the Iranians here on this trumped-up issue. And so more about it on the other side of this break with Dr. Yosef Butt, a real nuclear scientist, not like David Albright, the pretend one.
This part of the Scott Horton Show is sponsored by Audible.com. And right now, if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show, you can get your first audiobook for free. Of course, I'm recommending Michael Swanson's book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. Maybe you've already bought The War State in paperback, but you just can't find the time to read it. Well, now you can listen while you're out marching around. Get the free audiobook of The War State by Michael Swanson, produced by Listen and Think Audio, at audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. And look, I'm no nuclear scientist, but I know Dr. Gordon Prather. And he's the former chief scientist of the Army and used to design and build hydrogen bombs for Uncle Sam at Sandia. And he says David Albright is a fraud and has always been a fraud. And that's why he had to stop identifying himself as a nuclear physicist, because he got called on it, because he was not a nuclear physicist. And that's why he had to stop identifying himself as a former UN weapons inspector, because he is not a former UN weapons inspector. He's just an agent of influence for, gee, I don't know, somebody constantly rumor-mongering about Iran. And there's that great clip that was put up at Atomic Scientists the other day of him on CNN explaining how to detonate an implosion nuke, where he obviously had no idea what he was talking about, this clown. But anyway, I can say that because I'm just citing the great Gordon Prather, and he absolutely has the expertise to be able to shout down at David Albright. I don't mean to put words in your mouth, Yosef, or anything like that, but it's really important, as this guy is constantly scaremongering and rumor-mongering about Iran when we're on the eve of a de facto peace agreement with them, to put this gigantic, I would say, fake issue to bed. It's the biggest outstanding issue between our two countries, America and Iran, and it's overblown, but this is the chance to finally put it away, and we got these people trying to screw it up, these people who have no earned credibility anyway. They may get it in the media anyway, but
I think the modus operandi is just to, you know, drop things and, you know, ominous sounding things into the news stream from time to time, even if, you know, anything nuclear related sounds scary. And but when you actually dig up, like we did for the AP graphs, incidentally, he still disagrees about the Associated Press graphs that were a joke, really. He still seems to think that, you know, those are a real source of concern, and the ring magnets that were never actually ordered. Somebody in Iran allegedly was on the web, you know, maybe doing a Google search or something. But, you know, it's ridiculous how this kind of thing just gets hyped up, and it just, you know, it doesn't need to be real. It just needs to make it to the news cycle.
Well, and it's just like, and he also participated in the run-up to the Iraq War in the same way, giving credibility to all the assertions of the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq back in 2002 and 3. And it's just that very same thing, as you say, a never-ending deluge of accusations that, you know, virtually no one is equipped to bat down. Certainly, you know, no one wants to look like they're on the side of the Ayatollah. No American, right? It takes like a Jude Winiski or a Gordon Prather or somebody very brave to be will, or like yourself, to be willing to just come right out and say these assertions are not factual, back down, kind of thing.
Well, I mean,
don't
I
get
think
much
that's,
of that.
You know, yeah, well, I think that's the power of technical analysis, because, you know, it's sort of unambiguous. There's
right.
No, it's not a political call. It's, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, and there's not much to debate there.
Right.
But, you know, it's not just him. What's the problem now is even at the IAEA, the head of the IAEA, Yuki Amano, is known to be biased in his views, and not, you know, he should be impartial, but he's not, you know, he also gets in on just dropping these things from the past. For instance, this polonium-210 that was very, you know, scary sounding again, and he said that could be used for neutron initiators, but that issue was resolved by the IAEA itself back in 2008, and they said it's, you know, it's a closed issue, but he just decided to drop it in, you know, in a press conference.
And what was the issue there exactly? What was the excuse?
Well, I mean, I think they were just doing some experiment to, you know, there's lots of uses for polonium-210. You can use them in fire detection and things like that. You know, that has some industrial uses. So they might have been, I don't know what exactly they were doing, but it does have research uses, and they got the scientists to admit to it, and the IAEA said, yeah, that's fine, that makes sense. The issue is closed. That was in 2008. And he just dropped in, you know, this sentence in a press conference a couple of years ago. It just said, oh, and then there's this polonium-210 that the Iranians haven't told us about, but they had, and the IAEA had closed the issue. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just, that became like, you know, the scaremongering du jour for that week, so right. That's how it goes.
Now, let me ask you, did you read Gareth Porter's book, Manufactured Crisis?
Yeah, actually, yeah, I read at least large sections from it, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm interested in your review there, because what he does is he goes through every single accusation of every possible military dimension, you know, the technical term, and also just in English, everything that could have possibly been an indication of what they were doing with nuclear technology for nefarious purposes, and seems like he pretty much debunks every last little bit of it. Wonder whether you thought that, you know, you found any error in there, or you thought that he was right on with accounting this or that.
I think it's a great book. I recommend it to people to read. There was a lot of details that I didn't know about. I learned a lot from it. So, it's great. It's great investigative reporting. More people should be doing it, you know. I think there's Cy Hirsch at The New Yorker who does some good investigative reporting on this issue, and then Gareth Porter. And unfortunately, the other reporters, you know, just sort of reading tea leaves at these gatherings and trying to get into the power, you know, corridors of power, and not really doing any kind of critical analysis or any kind of investigative background checks on what these accusations are. They're just, just saying what other people say.
Right.
And not really informing us of if it's actually true.
All right, so, I mean, that puts us at a disadvantage in a way when a bunch of falsehoods about the danger carry the narrative. On the other hand, the president and the secretary of state sure seem to be pursuing this thing. I guess I don't know how hard or what the scuttlebutt is and the chatter and blah, blah, blah from those people, those same journalists that you cite from the conference in Vienna, but are you in any way optimistic for this deal working out?
I'm not really optimistic for this particular deadline, let's say the November 24th, although I think what's going to happen is, I think there's going to be an agreement to just keep this going, an extension, let's say. So, it'll just keep things rolling along. And what's odd is if you really think Iran is weaponizing, if you really think they're on the verge of doing this, there should be some urgency. You should be willing to do a lot to get them to to stop that. But it just seems like everybody's on cruise control, and they're like, okay, you know, well, it didn't work out this time. We'll just get another extension. Right. It doesn't seem like the kind of thing that would happen if Iran was really weaponizing, you know. So even just the pace of negotiations shows you that there's no desperation to get a deal, which is just odd.
Yeah, it's interesting. Stephen Walt pointed out, it's those of us who aren't concerned about Iran's nuclear program are the ones who want the deal, because we just want to put the dang issue to bed after years on end of scaremongering about this. While those who claim to be concerned, they apparently would rather have a war than a deal.
Yeah, and right now we go to ISIS, you know. Iran could help us out fighting ISIS, a jihadi group in Iraq and in Syria.
Well, that's a whole other interview there. But
yeah,
Yep. Hey, thanks so much for coming back on the show, Yosef. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
It's Dr. Yosef Butt. Check him out at armscontrollaw.com.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren's Coffee. Order now at darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and save $2. Darrenscoffee.com. Hey, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Okay, so Obama is going to let some illegal immigrants stay. He doesn't have the authority to write the law himself, but I like Mexicans. And I hate America's immigration policy. And I'll have you know, Obama is the worst president on immigration ever. He's deported more people than George Bush by about double or triple. Millions. And I'm not the best expert on this subject, but still. And I like Mexicans. And I hate white supremacists. That's what this is really about. Too many Mexicans in my neighborhood. Yeah, well, boo-hoo. Your great-grandfather shouldn't have voted for Polk then. And anyway, I hate America's immigration policy. I must say, I hate presidents more. So I don't approve of what Obama is doing. Well, I do approve of what he's doing, but I don't approve of him doing it, if you understand what I'm trying to say. So yeah, legalize immigration. And hey, how about not having presidents anymore? Has anybody ever thought of that? Hey, what if it didn't have to be this way at all? What if we didn't have to pick from Jeb Bush or Hillary Clinton? What if we went back to the Articles of Confederation? What if we had a private property anarchy and peace and freedom? Anyway, so that's my big coverage of the immigration issue on the show today. I hope I got your emotions all emotional. Apparently that's good for business. You already know this. Put this in your, I already know that file. After 13 years, two wars, and trillions in military spending, terrorist attacks are rising sharply. Yes, especially in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Nigeria, and Syria, but also everywhere else on Earth, too. And it's all George W. Bush and Barack H. Obama's fault. Everybody knows that. It's all because of the terror war. It's as simple as that. Especially it's because of George W. Bush's decision to overthrow the secular fascist dictator of Iraq, Saddam Hussein. And turn all of western and northwestern Iraq into lawless Osama bin Laden land. Wild West jihadi stand for a dozen years running now. And then it's also, of course, all Obama's fault for taking the side of the bin Ladenites outright in Libya and Syria. And helping the Mujahideen get built up to such a point that ISIS broke off from Nusra and declared themselves a state early. They say that Al-Qaeda doesn't like the Islamic State because they're too brutal. That's not the split. The split was, don't declare a caliphate yet, let's fight more. Versus, you know what, I'm going to declare myself the caliph. And so, screw you, Doc Zawahiri, said Baghdadi, and that was the split. Politics. Not ideology, not even ends, only means is all they differed. Zawahiri wanted a caliphate, he just wanted to wait a little longer. fight the Americans first. And in fact, the Americans are in the middle of proving Al-Qaeda right. That, nope, you gotta bankrupt the Americans completely and force them out of the region completely, or else they'll never let you have your caliphate. They'll keep bombing you. So that's what they're in the middle of doing now, is trying to lure us right back into the war over there. It's pretty obvious to everyone, right? Everybody understands this, right? I saw Shepard Smith. You know, Saddam is already a material breach. Why aren't we invading yet? Boo-hoo-hoo, that Shepard Smith. I saw him on Fox News saying, listen, they're trying to bait us into invading there. Seems like at some point maybe we should just cut our losses and knock this off and quit letting them dictate our policy to us and do this to us. And then, of course, Joint Chiefs Chairman predicts ISIS war will last 4 years. As Jason Ditz reports, with goals and scope unclear, timeline not based on anything they're willing to admit to. They're gearing up for a ground invasion. That's what it is. They've already got special forces there getting ready. And they're going to invade. Just like I told you before Mosul even fell, before the caliphate was ever declared. Who is going to be powerful enough to rouse these guys? Because even though it's American policy that has helped to create them, American policy can also not abide their presence, not indefinitely. I mean, hell, you think they couldn't abide Arab nationalism in the hands of Nasser or something like that? Imagine them allowing an outright avowed Islamo-fascist caliphate out of the neocons' war propaganda fantasies of lies that never existed a dozen years ago, and allowing it to just sit there and rule. Allowing Baghdadi to keep sermonizing from his balcony. They can't. And so they're going to war, and they've already announced they're going to destroy the Islamic State, but then Obama has said no ground troops. Well, it's going to take ground troops. And so he's a liar. If he really meant it, he would tell the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, if you don't like it, resign. But he's not doing that. He's just playing good cop. And then the right wing and the military establishment are playing bad cop. And here you have his former secretaries of defense, Gates and Panetta, both are coming out and saying Obama's doing the wrong thing by announcing we're not sending ground troops. We can't do it without ground troops. We gotta have ground troops, says Gates and Panetta. His two former secretaries of defense taking the side of the military against the civilian president, accusing him of, quote, micromanagement of the military. Micromanagement. Forbidding them from putting in the infantry? That's micromanagement. That's supposed to call to mind images of Lyndon Johnson and his maps getting way too involved in which brigades are going which directions, which is probably a bunch of hype in the first place. But anyway, micromanagement. Yeah, by all means, the Pentagon ought to be able to be free to set whatever foreign policy it wants, right? The Pentagon is the empire. I like times like this in a way. You know? Oh yeah, here. They did directly compare him to Johnson, who personally chose targets. Now, he doesn't accuse Obama of doing that. He has to bring up Johnson just to smear him. The idea being that, oh yeah, we'd have won the Vietnam War if only Johnson wasn't tying the soldiers' hands behind their backs and while sending them out to war. Yeah, if only they had just killed everyone in North Vietnam and South Vietnam, then there would have been no one left to resist them, huh? Wow. Yeah. The rules of engagement there that killed 3 million people, they were just way too restrictive. You know, if only America had actually brought the violence to them, things could have worked out. Goes the storyline that you're supposed to believe. And anyway, here they are. It's the entire military establishment. We saw this exact same thing in 2009. I don't think you could overstate this, man. There's no hyperbole possible in this discussion. the military is gaming the President of the United States. Well, I don't know. Maybe he is just playing good cop like I was accusing him a minute ago. But I don't know. This is pretty bad. And he does have his own personal legacy to worry about. And his own personal legacy for the long term, he thinks, would be better served if he does not reinvade Iraq. Even though he's really already doing it anyway in terms of special forces and support personnel. But it seems like he's reluctant, but they're just telling him, do it. Just like on The Simpsons, where they give President Schwarzenegger his four choices. Choose two. Choice two. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, Al Scott here for Whole Food Multicomplete at WholeFoodComplete.com. Whole Food Multicomplete is an entire supplement program in one bottle, containing 100% RDA of vitamins and minerals, plus live probiotics, digestive enzymes, antioxidant herbs, energy nutrients, and more. It's made in America using real foods and live probiotics. No chemical synthetics. It's soy-free, gluten-free, and independently tested and verified. They're so sure you'll love it, they're taking 20% off your first order with coupon code Scott Horton. Satisfaction is guaranteed at WholeFoodComplete.com.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Yeah, so, I don't know. Let's talk about Russia and all that for a second here, man. Oh, the cops. Yeah, it's kind of hard for me to choose. You know what? Yeah, let me get this Kissinger quote from, it was, German, was it Der Spiegel or the Zeit? Let me show you this quote here from Henry Kissinger. Talked about him the other day. Of course, Nixon's former National Security Advisor and Secretary of State under Ford, too. Anyway, so he's basically Rockefeller's man for Republican foreign policy kind of thing from previous generation, but still. However, in this case, he's right. And it's not just a matter of, oh, hey, look, confirmation bias. Even Henry Kissinger agrees with me. It's more a case of, hey, look, everybody, Henry Kissinger is being right about this. He has a very significant difference of opinion with the rest of the foreign policy establishment, and he's trying to correct them. He fears that same thing that you and I fear. That these idiots believe their own lies. And would make policies based on the lies that they tell us to justify their terrible policies that they do. And the thing of it is, there's really a lot to that. These political types, I mean, mostly they're a bunch of self-interested scum. They're not even really interested in the world so much. You know what I mean? They're interested in themselves. And so, Russian aggression in Eastern Europe. Hey, everybody you know says that and pretends to think that. I don't know. That's what people start believing. So here Kissinger is saying, hey, everybody, before you get too carried away with your narrative here, quote, the annexation of Crimea was not a move toward global conquest. It was not Hitler moving into Czechoslovakia. Putin spent tens of billions of dollars on the Winter Olympics in Sochi. The theme of the Olympics was that Russia is a progressive state tied to the West through its culture. Therefore, it presumably wants to be part of it. So it doesn't make any sense that a week after the close of the Olympics, Putin would just take Crimea and start a war over Ukraine. Well, yeah, also the facts. And he warns against restarting the Cold War, but I want to find this clip for you in case you haven't heard it. I've played it before, but it's an important clip. It's the editor of the Council on Foreign Relations Journal, Foreign Affairs, and oh man, I could have swore his name started with an E and it would have been in my sound bites right here. What's the guy's name again? It was some crazy name. Oh no, it starts with a G. Gideon something or something, right? Was it? Gideon Rose. Here we go.
Gideon Rose. This is the editor of the Council on Foreign Relations Journal, Foreign Affairs. The clip is just under 2 minutes. And this is him on the Stephen Colbert Show. And it's February the 24th. So the coup d'etat in Kiev took place on the night of the 21st, morning of the 22nd, right? So here's Gideon Rose, American foreign policy centrist spokesman, editor of their journal, editor of the Council on Foreign Relations Journal, explaining what's just happened on the Stephen Colbert Show. And God help me, there better not be an autoplay ad already going in the background somewhere. Okay, good. Here, check it out. It'll play in a sec.
It's basically Robin to Russia's Batman. And the challenge here, the challenge here is to try to attract it to the West, to get it to flip sides.
Is America taking sides in this in any way? If these people, the rebels are winning right now, right?
Yes, just
so
recently.
Why isn't Obama spiking the ball in the end zone and calling Putin and saying, hey, you might have won the medal count, but we won the country count, biatch.
It's actually a very good question, and the answer is that we don't want Russia to intervene and kick over the table like a game of Risk and take Ukraine back. And so
would they do that? Could he send in troops?
Yes, he could. So we are choosing...
Now, does Ukraine have any troops of their own? Would they fight back?
Yes, but we don't want this to escalate, and we don't want Russia to crack down. So we want to basically distract Russia. Oh, look, you have the highest medal count. Oh, you did really well. And, you know,
possible?
Focus on the Olympics.
Here's a shiny object. Focus we'll just take an entire country away from you.
Basically.
Now, there's a power vacuum right now.
There's a power vacuum. The opposition is all together, which everybody, it's easy to agree on getting rid of the bad old regime and much harder to create a stable country in which everybody compromises and moves forward. The reason we don't want Putin to get involved in this, and so we are basically, we want to try and involve him in this decision so that he allows Ukraine to go. We actually want to not, we want to say, we want a non-exclusive relationship with Ukraine. You can have a relationship with it too.
You're the only one making this into a girlfriend-boyfriend relationship.
Ukraine is basically choosing its future between two completely different courses of action, and we're trying to blur that choice so the old boyfriend doesn't get too upset when it makes the right choice towards us.
He might punch us in the face. Well, thank you so much, Gideon Rose. Gideon Rose, Foreign Affairs Magazine.
All right, so now the thing of that is that same editor of Foreign Affairs, Gideon Rose, also published a piece by John Mearsheimer explaining the truth of the situation, that America picked this fight. It's just a damn lie that the Russians are bent on, you know, Putin or I guess there's some people maybe to his right who have fantasies like this. There is no Russian policy to recreate the Russian Empire, much less the Soviet Empire and their domination of Eastern Europe. America hired real, no fooling, Adolf Hitler loving Nazis to overthrow the government of Kiev. Men who are proud of their grandfathers who served in the SS, murdering Poles and Jews in the Holocaust. Proudly parading around, they now are in the parliament, they run the security services and the new National Guard, the Svoboda and right sector parties and brigades, the Azov Battalion. These are America's allies, a bunch of real, actual Nazis, fanatical Nazis. And America put them in power to overthrow and cancel the election results from 2010, which were recognized as free and fair internationally at the time. And as Gideon Rose says there, as you're distracted by the Olympics, we're doing a coup d'etat and stealing this country away from you. And I have, in fact, hell, I got Nuland on here too. I got the Nuland phone call where she's plotting the coup d'etat as America's ambassador to Europe.
The Klitschko piece is obviously the complicated electron here, especially the announcement of him as deputy prime minister. And you've seen some of my notes on the troubles in the marriage right now, so we're trying to get a read really fast on where he is on this stuff. But I think your argument to him, which you'll need to make, I think that's the next phone call we want to set up, is exactly the one you made to Yachts. And I'm glad you sort of put him on the spot on where he fits in this scenario. And I'm very glad he said what he said in response.
I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience, the governing experience. He's the guy, you know, what he needs is Cleach and Tony Book on the outside. He needs to be talking to them four times a week, you know. I just think Cleach going in, he's going to be at that level working for Yatsenyuk. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Okay, good. Well, do you want us to try to set up a call with him as the next step?
I can't remember if I told you this or if I only told Washington this, that when I talked to Jeff Feltman this morning, he had a new name for the UN guy, Robert Seri. Did I write you that this morning?
Yeah, okay. I saw that.
He's now gotten both Seri and Ban Ki-moon to agree that Seri could come in Monday or Tuesday.
Okay.
So that would be great, I think, to help glue this thing and have the UN help glue it and, you know, the EU.
No, exactly. And I think we've got to do something to make it stick together, because you can be pretty sure that if it does start to gain altitude, the Russians will be working behind the scenes to try to torpedo it.
So on that piece, Jeff, when I wrote the note, Sullivan's come back to me, VFR, saying you need Biden, and I said probably tomorrow for an attaboy and to get the deets to stick. So
okay.
Biden's willing.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thanks.
There you go. So that's Jeffrey Pyatt, the ambassador to Ukraine, and Victoria Nuland, the wife of Robert Kagan, plotting the coup d'etat. And you hear her talking about, we want it to be Yats, the guy that she chose to be the new prime minister, and we need him to work with Tannenbaum. Who's Tannenbaum? Tannenbaum's a Nazi. Put Tannenbaum in Google, and the first image that comes up is him with his Hitler salute in the air. And he ain't being ironical or anything either. His Svoboda Party used to be called the Social National Party. He's a Nazi. And anyway, so that's what started the fight there, and Henry Kissinger's right. Don't believe this hype about Russian aggression. It's just not true. America, as you well know, is the aggressor, always. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation. As you may already be aware, Jacob Hornberger, Sheldon Richman, and James Bovard are awesome. They're also in every issue of The Future of Freedom, and they're joined by others of the best of the libertarian movement. People like Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Lawrence Vance, Joe Stromberg, and many more. Even me. Sign up for The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom, edited by Sheldon Richman at fff.org/subscribe. And tell you heard it here.